We're back on Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today's February 19th, 2019.
Yes.
You know, and we probably should say right off the bat the reason why we missed last week. We weren't intended to miss last week, but there was a fire on...
Well, there was a fire in Cambridgeport.
In Cambridgeport.
Happened to be the building I live in.
Right.
So that was on
Monday. So Monday, right.
So
it would have been
needless to say
not the best thing to kind of run into TV shows on Tuesday.
No,
in light of
that. And I don't want to talk a lot about it, but I just want to thank, before I get emotional here, the Cambridge Fire Department, especially Stacia Joyce, Emergency Management, Brian. I'm sorry, I don't have your last name in front of me. Who were concerned about me because I was clearly older than most of the other residents in the buildings. And
we're very lucky, actually, to have the Cambridge Fire Department, and
yes,
we do, because they're actually respected around the state. I knew people who work for the Massachusetts Port Authority.
They are stellar.
Who
Paul
just,
Burke, okay,
let's speak,
right there, yeah,
you know, glowingly of the Cambridge Fire Department. So.
Yes, they took pictures down in my dining room and put them in the drawers. They covered my boarder's laptop, they closed it and put a blanket
did,
on it.
They did.
They do what they can because they know
they go above and beyond.
Fortunately, it wasn't fire in the units. It was the water using to take out the fire.
Yeah.
But so I
and everybody's okay.
And everybody's okay. Everyone got out
thing.
And thank you to the neighbor who these days who banged on the doors because it was coming out of the top of the chimney. So
that's right. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know. Your word to the wise in a situation like this. Smoke detectors
don't
pick up smoke within a unit,
exactly,
but if something's within a wall, it may not know it at all.
It was in the crawl space above my third floor bedroom and bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, just, I don't know what to say. We were very fortunate. It happened in the morning, not in the middle of the night. It happened when everybody was there and got out. Everyone's fine. Well, I shouldn't say fine.
It's disruptive.
It's very disruptive.
Yes. Yes.
I was there the longest, 30 years. That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Fortunately, I'm related to the owner. Well, not related, but you know what I mean.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's all okay right now.
So
it's
we all get through here.
So let's talk about important things.
Let's talk about important
trees.
Things.
Trees.
No
trees burned.
That's true.
Now, see, no trees burned, no ashes or embers. So that's good.
Yeah.
Not that we have that many right there, but.
You know, not that there's a whole lot we can say about it here, but the thing is that something I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention.
It was a bad week. There was a fire
so
the next
really
day.
Bad week.
Really bad week.
All right. You know, so a Cambridge resident, Paula Shiraga, was the cyclist who was killed around the intersection of
Park Drive and Brookline Ave. Very bad intersection for anybody.
Always has been.
Yes.
And tragedies happen, but it's especially telling when it's people you know.
Yep.
So this is a person who I knew, who was actually amongst many of the people who were in the kind of, what you might call activists, especially environmental activism, a lot of people knew Paula. And for me, she was a person who I know from a friend's. We often go to a common friend's house
for some
get-togethers.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've probably seen her at Helen's Swaps.
Yeah,
and
she and her husband, Eric, were some of the people who are, you know, very sort of strong advocates, strong positioned, whatever, but...
Didn't make you feel like you were...
You didn't feel... You could disagree. It didn't matter. You know, it's... If all the activist world could be like Paula Shiraga, we'd all be a better world. But anyway, so she died in this accident, and it was...
Terrible.
You know, it's sort of frightening to me.
It was during the day, right?
Yes, it was like 1:20 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. The woman who was killed on Putnam Ave a few years ago was Marcia Deal, I knew as well.
Yes.
The pedestrian killed in Porter Square, Marcy Mittler, friend of Renee's,
That's
I
who
met.
That's who I was trying to think
as
of.
Well.
Renee,
yeah, so, you know, it's...
Well, you've been around long enough, you know...
You get to know people,
and
it's not... It's not just some abstraction, it's not some faraway TV broadcast. It's real. It's people you know.
Do we know anything about the... cement truck was mentioned.
So the
cement truck was stopped, right?
My understanding was it was the light had turned green, truck started moving, the intersection wasn't clear, and we'll have to just leave it to the authorities to determine fault. One thing I, you know, for those who are affected by this that is worth knowing is that I believe it's this, it's this coming Sunday, February 24th. I think that's, did I get that right?
There's, the 24th is, no, I think it's a Saturday, no? No, you're right. It's a Sunday.
But the thing is that there's a tradition when there are tragedies involving cyclists where they put up what they call ghost bikes, or these bikes.
There's one at
That this weekend. I think it's like in between 2 and 4 in the afternoon. I do have it written down here somewhere. If I discover it, I'll mention it. But it's a might be worth your while. So
There's one at Porter Square
for Joe Lavin's.
Yeah.
So. I mean, it's a large and complicated discussion.
Right. I mean, God bless her. She's, I think, 69 or 69, bikes. She's a biker, but I would never bike around there, ever. I just, I see a truck, I freeze.
Not to go on too much about it, but intersection is really where the most dangers are. That's where the interactions with other vehicles.
And there's
happens.
Five streets turning, that are coming into that intersection.
Crossing traffic, turning traffic. It's really about the intersections. That's exactly where this happened.
Yeah.
In fact, in most of the incident, the tragedies that
they've
we've
been
had
where
are
streets are meeting
intersections.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And I think the city and advocates do a lot trying to change things along roadways. But the thing is that
just so much you can.
Even for those who are diehard believers in protected infrastructure, there's
still have
only
to eventually
so much
cross.
You can't put flex posts in the middle of an intersection. Right. You can't put barriers in the middle of intersections. So it's still sort of out in the open. And until we sort of find ways through better light cycles.
Better sight lines
phases,
on trucks.
Better sight lines on trucks.
Especially moving trucks and side guard, all that stuff.
Sometimes it's as simple as the thing is the width of the road or the timing of the signals that are the problem.
Yes.
I mean, who has not been out in the middle of an intersection when a light changed?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in principle, even if a light changes when you're in an intersection, vehicles are not supposed to proceed until the intersection is cleared. But it's just not how it often works.
Well, there are some intersections around Harvard where you have a walk light, but they also have, I turn that all the time, by Sanders.
Yeah.
So you do have to pay attention to pedestrians, even though you can still go.
Yeah. Right. But we're a very impatient world, and
too many
people just say, "Oh, they just see the light turn green, they go."
Right. Or just like I was telling you the other, when I was walking here, she just went right against the light while she's on her phone, and the car, had the right of way, and it's just.
If there's any one wish I could have for, not specific about infrastructure, it's just that
pay attention.
But we should also we just need to have systems in place so that. Somebody making an error, driver, cyclist, pedestrian, I'm not talking, I'm not specific about any of this, is it a little mistake, you shouldn't be deadly, I worry about that when I see people on sidewalks and then cars whipping by 4 feet away, the thing is, if somebody just decided because they were joking around with their friend and somebody went, stepped into the road, it could be deadly.
Right.
And until we kind of make things a little safer, sort of generically that way.
I think you just have to be super vigilant. As a pedestrian and my daughter who's younger, you're trying to cross at night. You look at the driver coming into you and make sure they see you.
Yeah.
I do like those the crosswalks that light up. I think we're going to get more of those because that's hard.
As I say to people, it's cold consolation to be able to say you were in the right.
No.
It's more important just to protect yourself in every way.
Even if they're wrong, you still could be alive if you just pay attention.
Yeah. Always just don't assume anybody's going to do right because you can't count on it. And the consequences are just too great.
People are on their phones in the cars. You got Lyft drivers, Uber drivers. You're stopping everywhere.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. All right.
So anyway, so that
so you that know, was figure, sad. That was very
that
sad.
Was pretty harsh.
But you knew. You
yeah.
Know,
no, yeah, I knew. Yeah, I knew yeah. them. You know. So. yeah. Anyway.
The way it goes.
Let me just sort of switch. I'm going to just say that this is very, very short. You know, as
there's nothing short with you, Ron.
That's kind of true. Mm-hmm. It is a municipal election year. I just want to say that I'm looking. This is actually really fast. Okay. So already people are all sort of putting things together. I know that the ABC group is yes. now sort of has like a political arm. But come on, let's face it, it's the same organization.
A Better Cambridge.
Yeah, a Better Cambridge, right? And I just because of where I work. At MIT.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
I think there's another candidate's going to be coming here.
Oh, give. Uh-oh.
So I get rumors, right?
I don't know.
So we do have. I'm just going to mention his name is Burhan Azim, and he's been involved in a few things. I saw his name
oh,
as participating in some city council.
Oh, he's part
hearings
of the
and whatever.
Cambridge.
So anyway, some people I know who live down around here says, like, oh, yeah, he's thinking of running for city council this year.
Why doesn't he run for president and join the rest of the 20?
So he'll be 22 if he runs.
Dear.
It's not a guarantee. But the thing is...
Getting his name out there.
Well, it was kind of funny because I asked the person who was telling me about it. I said, mm-hmm. well, what do you know about it? Tell me about it. Well, he believes in this. And I go, oh, okay, I'll tell you who his friends are.
Oh, I already know his friends.
Because I could tell you, say, yeah. well, he knows mm-hmm. this person here, because yeah. the thing is that there's certain kind of political orientations that people will have, and you sort of yeah. know who they're hanging out with, you know, and sure enough, it was true.
So where on the spectrum would you kind of pinpoint him politically,
you know,
or a person like that? I shouldn't just point to him.
It's funny, when we head into municipal election yeah. years, I never really honestly know what, like, sort of the defining issues are going to be, because it's not always circumstance that drives them. It's actually people force certain issues and say, these will be the issues this year.
Yeah, but so, there are issues already.
Right.
People are
okay, so there are some people who will with. Always make... Well, some years ago, it was like commercial development was like the big issue. You know,
well,
now
still,
it's, now it's like, are you in favor of more density, less density?
Tree canopy. You know?
Trees are becoming
an
emergent issue for the year.
Affordable housing, yeah.
2 years ago, certainly the bike lobby became kind of like...
That's going to be constant.
They pressed the issue,
yeah.
So I don't honestly know what sort of the dominant themes are going to be as we go into this, but I can already see people starting to take sides, you know.
Yep.
So whether you know, depending on your perspective about housing and affordability of housing, and I wish people would exhibit a little more nuance in understanding the big picture rather than say, I believe in affordable housing. Yeah, everybody believes
in
affordable housing.
But look at what, first of all, Cambridge does well. I think we do have a lot of affordable housing units. We have, you know, some more than some other places, but still.
Right. So, you know, so we'll see whether it turns into the NIMBYs versus the YIMBYs or the tree people versus the woodsmen. I don't know how it's going to really shape up. But, you know, and it's only February. But the thing is there's already people are doing fundraisers. So,
and you follow the money, too, don't you, a little bit?
Yeah, I'll keep track of it. Right. So far,
anybody can follow the money, but you're...
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
no, I check out the Office of Campaign Political Finance and just sort of see what's up. And I'm sort of dedicating myself to not be doing it every day.
Good.
Because I don't want to go lose my mind.
No.
But I'm going to sort of at least once a month do updates of a table. We'll basically show, you know, who's raising money and whatever. It's actually the biggest teller of who's really interested
in
really being
a
candidate
run.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, some of the incumbents already have a little bit in their accounts.
Oh, yeah. Some have a pile of money.
Pile of money, right.
Yeah. You know, and I'm not going to go into all the names
now.
But I'll just say there's some who actually, you know, did not spend the last year raising or spending money. They just said,
we'll
do that when the election comes.
Right.
I say, good for them.
Exactly.
Right? Then there are others who are raising enormous amounts of money year round. So it's interesting to watch it shape up. So
since we're not here last week, there was a city council meeting on the 11th.
Right.
And then there was the tree ordinance meeting. So let's maybe backtrack
do a little bit of that. So certainly on the meeting of the 11th.
Which you were at.
I was at.
I watched it
meeting.
That night, even though it was the night I was at my daughter's house. I put it on just I figured that's good background. But then I did rewatch it a few nights later to pay more attention to some parts you had told me about.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that that keeps me coming back, honestly, other than the friendship, because I honestly, part of the reason you go up to City Hall on a Monday night, at least for me, is because I know a lot of the people. And it's like going out. It's like bowling night for me. It's like you go out and you hang out with your friends. So I get something out of that. So it's not.
But you're hanging out in the hallway there.
Sometimes in, inside, and sometimes I'm out in the hallway.
Yeah, you can't talk too much inside.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why sometimes you're outside, so you can chat with people. Right. You know, so and really some of my best long term friends actually are people who are civically engaged. So I see them there. And actually, I know a lot of people who work in city departments. So, you know, get to chat with them as well. Right. It's always so interesting.
Just notice that's not on the computer, not that we need. Oh, it's over here.
Okay.
Never mind.
Okay. Never mind. But the one of the things that I really, really enjoy about the whole process is sometimes there's, you know, there's an incident that usually triggers something. Like, for example, there was that flooding caused by the water main break in
Craig Street. Right, and that's been every week. Every city council meeting's had
Some of the people from Mercer Circle are coming up, you know, and they're saying.
But that was on the agenda, on the city manager's agenda, a response to it.
So there was an inquiry about basically about the age and how are the pipes maintained, how is the city's infrastructure. And I'm a, I used to say I'm an E&I guy, environment and infrastructure, because I put the two together. I always have
sewers and
You know, and for me, whenever there's a something like this, it's actually an opportunity for people from the water department or other city departments to sort of come back and provide information I may or may not know.
Is that a water main? Is that a guy? I thought that was a Lego character. I swear that. If you could get that, that looks just like it.
Yeah. All right. So see if I could show you here.
All right.
So this is an image that actually has nothing to do with something recently.
I swear I thought it was a Lego.
Yeah. This was a 30-inch main.
Oh my goodness.
Actually, I think if
is that what's leaking right there?
Click on that. I forget if it blows up or not.
Or go bigger.
I'm not sure if it will. We'll just get rid of that. Okay.
All right. But anyway.
But anyway, the idea was I think you just close that window. We'll be fine.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, so that was actually the water main that runs down length of Broadway.
Oh, my goodness.
My street. And there was a time there was a leaky street, and it was a pretty serious, but it didn't turn into like a real gusher.
Right.
But it was pretty obvious it was a problem, so they had to open it up.
Jeez.
And they have, what they do sort of typically is they actually come in with a big section of 30-inch pipe, thick, like inch and a quarter thick steel.
This looks bigger than 30 inches. You sure it's just 30? Because look at this guy.
Right, yeah. No, I think the diameter was about 30.
All right, yeah, okay.
And what they do is they actually cut out a section. And they put in a new section with the appropriate collars to sort of make a joint. And they always put in, they try to put in valves, because the more places they can shut off.
Individually rather than shutting
then
off
you can,
the whole thing.
Then you can isolate it, because the way... Yeah. The way it works in the city is that it's not water infrastructure like electrical infrastructure. It's not all like a tree and roots where it goes, it splits, and it divides up.
That would not be great, because then everything would get...
Well, if there was a break in one place here, it just shuts things off.
That's what I'm saying.
So what it is, it's more like a network.
Right.
So that what you do is you can have an entire street that you can isolate.
Good.
And then the water can come actually from the other direction. It also causes a lot of sediment to get disrupted when that happens. Mm. But if there was a fire, you'd be very happy that the water's at least running.
Right.
So
that's a good point.
So it's actually very fascinating to learn what's under the streets in the city.
No one thinks about it.
Nobody thinks about it.
Everything's under the Putnam Avenue. It's the cable. Everything's it's all submerged. Yeah. Electrical. Yeah. Everything.
Well, I mean, I think when we did our last show, people were being raising hell about putting an electrical transformer station.
Oh, the substation. Whether that was
Benny or Fulkerson Street,
right?
You know what I want to say. Well, you know, I think you can have a good argument there. But the thing is that, you know, are people aware that there are actually high voltage lines running under the streets of Cambridge, where the high voltage line to dissipate the heat, it's actually running. They're running oil, right?
Oh my
mineral
goodness.
Oil.
Jeez.
And then that's being pumped through there, and then they take it and it's warmed, and then they basically
so
use like a refrigerator.
Are you saying that that's similar to the substation and what maybe?
No, what I'm just saying is that if people are concerned about proximity to major electrical infrastructure, well, guess what, folks? It's running right under the streets.
But I think they're concern is that it's somehow connected to some kind of radiation. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, but the electromagnetic fields are the fields.
Electromagnetic fields, and they're
going to exist regardless. So, but anyway, I just think it's amazing. Mm. I remember this is a sort of a funny off topic, but some years ago when Cambridge had declared itself like a nuclear-free zone.
Oh,
right?
My goodness, yes.
I remember there was a fellow, this guy Rick I knew, who was worked for what was then, not NSTAR, it was Cambridge Electric Light Company back
right,
then.
Yeah.
And he said, just because of the place Cambridge occupied in the grid, that you could actually do a calculation to determine what the source of your power was for the most part at any given time.
Hmm.
And from almost all times of the day, at the time, 53% of the power in Cambridge came from nuclear energy.
Wait, that was back then?
That was back then. So the thing is that the grid changes. They've been putting a lot of natural gas power stations online. So it changes. It's never fixed.
Probably it's a cleaner environment, I hate to say it.
Right, but they're bringing in high, transmission lines from other places. So it's not a static thing. And
no.
I think to some degree, I don't know to what degree when people sign on to various sort of green energy.
I just signed on to the 100%, but they're not going to get anything from me now.
Right, yeah, really. But when you do that, I don't know that when you say I'm paying for like all solar or I'm paying for wind power, whatever, you're just still taking it off the grid. So it's more of an accounting mechanism.
Yeah, I think you're trying to get your energy as much as they can from this.
I think what you're doing is you're directing investment towards certain future infrastructure.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
when you do that. But the thing is it's not like they say, well, Judy signed up for the green one, so crank up another windmill.
Hey,
you can shut down that plant, the gas-fired plant in Chelsea,
I mean, our reliance on electricity,
which is only going to get greater.
I mean, is actually, as I have, looking at all my electronics, it is actually overwhelming to me.
It is pretty.
You know that?
Yeah. And the thing is as people move away from, or at least desire to move away from fossil fuels, as long as you still need energy, I mean, great. You
can still super
insulate your house, use a minimum of energy. But the thing is that if you
get
rid of the fossil fuels, you definitely become even more reliant on electrical
grid. And not everybody can afford solar right now, even though there's all these rebates. There's a lot we can do.
So, anyway, back to the crazy street matter.
Mercer Circle. But it happened, right.
So the thing is that I don't know. I mean, we have the city solicitor up there pretty much explaining from a legal point of view that there's really not a whole lot the city
Well, they're still
can
looking
do.
Into some kind of sovereign versus...
Right.
I don't know.
Well, the thing is that the money basically follows the law and liability.
Right.
And from a legal point of view, the city isn't liable simply because they have, in fact, done best practices in maintaining their systems. It wasn't like they were negligent.
No, they have a whole repair schedule, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're way actually ahead of most municipalities, in fact. So from a legal point of view, you can't really say Cambridge has been falling down on the job.
Yeah.
People get a little thrown by it because they say, well, how old was the pipe? Oh, it's about 120-something years old.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, that's... actually, in this case, it was more like 150.
Really?
I think actually at the city council meeting, I don't know if it was Sam Corder from the Water Department, it may have been... No, actually, it was Nancy Glow, the city solicitor, pointed out that, in fact, this inch and a quarter thick... water main pipe, the steel pipe, which is not what they put in now. They put in something.
What is this cement lining thing mean?
Well, that's what they did later. But the thing is that the when they put that stuff in, it's put in with the understanding it could last and should last 200 years.
Yeah,
I had never heard
so.
That, and I thought, well, that's great.
Yeah.
So we're about 150 years in, and about 50-60 years ago, what they do to prevent corrosion is they do cement lining within the pipe.
Right.
So this way, the water and other any chemistry within the pipe is not interacting with the conduit so much anymore. Right. But the thing is that as Sam Corder pointed out, he's the managing director of the water department.
He was spoke to.
Yeah. So when they do replacements now, they use like a ductile steel, which has a little bit of flexibility, but the old cast iron pipes are magnificent.
Yeah.
But
they
can crack.
Yeah.
Because it's cast iron, and when they fail, they can really fail, right? Whereas if it's just ductile steel, you know, it can just bend a little bit, you know, and give, have a little more give. So anyway, these are things you can learn by going up to City Hall or at least turning on the TV.
So was there any way to have stopped the water from getting that far, or was it just so quick?
You know, there's just so much volume, yeah. And I think they actually, you know, sometimes it's not as easy as you might think to find the valves to even shut things off, especially if it's a main line. So there may be some time to shut it off, and then
you have to get into the ground.
And it's still pressurized, so even if you get the valves off, you can still have water coming out for a good while.
But next question: do they have any computerized stuff on all these things they can see from a desk?
You know, I don't know how much they can have, like pressure sensors and whatever for these things.
Okay.
I'm sure
they must have some kind of computerized.
They must have
that
some.
They can keep a watch on the system.
I think with each passing year, I'm sure they're trying to implement whatever is the best available technology. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what kind of technology is there, and I imagine it would be a great thing if you could detect a sudden pressure drop, right away. But the thing is, I don't know that they have a way of remotely shutting the valves.
I always think remotely, but at least they know we have trouble here and to send a crew out.
Of course, sometimes the fastest way is somebody calls.
Well, yeah,
you
hey.
Know, and then and they're there, in a, there. You know, yeah. in a split second. But the thing is, so but the, you know, even in a short period of time, 15 minutes can cause tremendous damage.
After this thing happened to me, I mean, I just hear, you know, natural gas, the gas explosions in Lawrence, it's just, we are so dependent on energy, and I know I would love to live with all solar and windmills and all that, but until we get there, we're going to just have to deal with all this, you know, and figure out a safe
actually,
way to do
if
it.
Actually, if you think about it, when you're putting in a new boiler or whatever, every new system actually is a lot more complicated than the old systems.
Right, and
they may be better.
They might be more efficient, but
there's also more things to break.
I'll have a story about my hard drive and my laptop, I can tell you, just to that point.
Right. Okay. You know, so the thing is, we're heading into an even more complicated world with every passing week.
But hopefully
a better one.
I don't know. If you didn't listen to NPR this morning about the warming of it was really dismal. Forget it. I think I might be 100 when all this happens, if I'm around.
All right. Anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.